This podcast is proudly brought to you by Octane Coffee, with locations on the West Side, Grant Park, the Pocket Bar in the Bank of America Plaza, and even the newest outpost in Birmingham, Alabama. For more information, please visit octanecoffee.com. I'm Floyd Hall, and this is a Wonder Root Arts in Atlanta podcast, and I have the pleasure today of speaking with two great photographers, Jennifer Swartz and Kat Gaduko. How are you ladies doing?
Great. Awesome.
I'm awesome as well. Thank you all for coming in today. Let's talk about photography in Atlanta, shall we? Let's start with both of your stories. So, Kat, you have a very interesting story you were just sort of sharing with us off air. Talk about how you got into photography. How did that happen for you?
Well, when I first came into Atlanta, I was working with the Atlanta Hawks for about 5 years, and I've been shooting since high school, and didn't really go to school for photography. I actually went to school for marketing and international business. So when I was working with the Hawks, I had a more corporate, you know, job, not so creative directly. And one day, you know, after five or so years of working there, I just felt kind of empty inside. I don't know how to describe it. But I went, I was telling y'all, I went to a church. I didn't even go to this church. And I just sat down outside. I'm like, dude, give me some dumb, obvious signs because I suck at guessing, right? And like, I expected to get an answer at some point, but I didn't expect it to hit me like 5 minutes later, like literally sign after sign. And I took that as, you know, something to listen to. And that Monday, I put my 2 weeks in, and I decided to do photography full time, stop freelancing, and actually invest in myself full time to kind of make my passion in a business.
Now, I thought it would be a great conversation between the two of you because I felt like you two would sort of come from this from a couple of different sides of the coin here. So, Jennifer, I know we talked offline as well, and I like the tagline that you gave in terms of what you're about is creating a demand for art in a lot of different capacities. So if you could speak to how you kind of got to this point and what you're involved with.
Sure. So I opened Jennifer Schwartz Gallery, which shows fine art photography from emerging and some mid-career, but primarily emerging photographers. So photographers who are just starting to get their name out. And what I realized, so that was in March of 2009. And what I realized really early on was that a huge part of my job and a big challenge, it wasn't exclusively or even primarily about selling the work. It was about finding an audience for these artists. And if I had opened a gallery that showed blue chip work, for example, my buying audience would already be a lot more educated maybe about what they were looking at, and the artists that I was showing would already have a proven track record of collectability and price. And so, but I was showing people that didn't have any proven track record that I was trying to prove. You know, I was trying to help, I am trying to help them create that. And so I've kind of gone through a lot of iterations of trying to figure out how do you bring people to art? How do you get people to come in the door and connect? How do you give someone who's not seeking an arts experience, how do you get them over that hump, whatever barriers to entry they have, whether it's they feel like they can't afford original art or that they don't know enough about art to make a purchase that they can feel good about or that they aren't confident in their tastes. And how do you bring someone to the point of not even considering art to loving it and really feeling like they're on a path to appreciate, patronize, collect, support original art and artists. And so, yeah, so all of the programming that I've done through the gallery has been really focused on building audiences, on creating demand. And same, the Crusade for Art is a nonprofit mission-based organization that I have started to really focus in on that issue, on how do you build demand for art. There's a lot of, I wouldn't say there's a lot, the funding and the support that exists for artists tends to be on the supply side. So helping artists educate themselves, create work, exhibit work, but not so much on building an audience for that work when it exists. And so if all of this continues and we're churning out more and more artists because the support is on creation, then this is an imbalance that's going to continue to get bigger and bigger and could potentially topple the whole art scene. And so if we don't cultivate new collectors and new supporters for art, we are really going to be in a crisis situation, is my very dramatic take on it.
Well, Jennifer, you from the art side of things, and Kat, you from the perhaps photojournalism side of things, I think both of you still lie at that intersection of creativity and commerce, yes, in a way.
Sure.
So what are some of those major challenges for you right now as you really look at the commerce side of what you're trying to continue to inject into the world from, you know, that sort of stance of looking at both the creative side as well as the commerce side and making those work?
Well, I mean, for me, you mean my personal challenges or challenges in general? Because it's different.
You can speak to both.
Well, for me, I'm noticing that a lot of my clients have been asking me to teach them. You know, they buy this fancy camera, whatever the new latest camera is, and they would like me to teach them principles, or they get lessons in these principles. Yet, to say in order to save money, because, you know, cost, that everyone's cutting back on cost, blah, blah, blah. Well, what they're finding out is they're spending money on this fancy camera and on lessons, but still aren't getting the product that they desire for whatever general purpose they want to use the photos for. And what I tell them is that I could read a medicine book, right, and try to diagnose myself when I'm sick, but I still can't do the same job as what a doctor can do. There's a reason why people are specialized in certain things, right? It's because that's what they spend most of their time doing. And
they're talented.
Yeah,
they
have some sort of like eye or knack for it. So I just think that's one of my challenges right now, is to show people that there's a reason why our industry is still alive and you're still using us.
That's a great point.
Kat, you mentioned the fact that a lot of your clients are trying to save money and cut back in terms of what they are going to spend on photography. And I guess that speaks to a larger example of where we are from an economy standpoint.
Right.
So to pivot this back to you, Jennifer, when it comes to perhaps new art collectors who are perhaps price conscious or maybe affected by the economy in some way, could both of you give some context to where you are as it relates to continuing to thrive when the economy for some people still has not gotten back to where it was, a decade ago?
Sure. I mean, a lot of people have said to me all along, oh, you chose to open a gallery during this economy, and that's so crazy. And while, yes, that, of course, economics affect things, but from my perspective, I feel that the work that I show and the work that I sell is at an incredibly affordable price point, certainly relative to other fine art mediums and even other photography, because, again, these are emerging photographers. These are price points of someone who's just starting out in their career. And so I feel like also that the type of person that I'm trying to cultivate and bring in is not someone that... It's someone that is interested in the things in their world, and they're engaged, and they're seekers, and they're curious about certain things, and they're kind of on trend and want to go to the farm to table, the latest farm to table restaurant, and they are spending $5 or $10 a day at the cool coffee shop. And so the things that there are a lot of things that are still doing well. It's a lifestyle thing. Mm-hmm. And people will still spend money on those things. And so it's not like everyone's at home with an instant coffee maker. They still want to be, you know, in the cool place, experiencing the cool things. And art, to me, is a really natural fit into that. It's just a matter of opening someone up to it and kind of making room to put that in the realm of coffee and wine and food. And the price points that I'm talking about are, $500, a $500 original limited, super limited photograph from an incredibly talented artist that you get to have on your wall forever. And when people are like, oh, that's so much money, and I'm not saying it's not, I'm not saying it's insignificant, but a lot of people spend that on dinner and a new pair of jeans without even batting an eye. And I'm not saying you shouldn't, because I'm totally all about that too, but I'm saying that that it's just a matter of thinking about it in a little bit of a different context. Art's not a bucket that people are used to putting any money into, but try it. And put it on your wall and live with it and see that every time you walk by, you feel something or think something. I mean, if it's something that you really feel speaks to you or that you can make a connection with, that's something that is it's pretty priceless.
I agree.
Jennifer, you talked about creating demand, especially for emerging photographers. What have you learned about trying to create a demand or sell the work of artists who may not have the longest track record as of now?
I've learned a lot of things.
Please share.
So, and again, the audience that I'm talking about bringing in is not, they're not collectors yet. So that's not even, I would say, their focus, that, okay, what's this piece going to be worth in such and such many years? And the great thing about having a relationship with a gallery or some other type of curatorial person is that if you trust the gallery and you like the aesthetics that they're showing, it adds a level of trust where you're not just left off on your own to walk the Piedmont Art Festival and hope you pick something from a good artist. You know, like if it's already been curated, you're kind of does that make sense? Sort of cutting off this level of uncertainty. But what I have realized is that, and what I read a lot of arts engagement studies because I'm a giant dork like that. But I think that a huge thing to appeal to a younger, newer, contemporary audience, it's really important to create an aesthetic experience around art, so something that draws in their intellect and creates an opportunity to really engage with the work. And so the programs that I have created really attempt to do that. So instead of just having an opening where people are drinking bad Chardonnay and just talking to their friends and like, oh, this is nice, to really create opportunities to engage with the work, to meet the artists, huge. If there was one thing I would say that across the board is been shown to be the most significant thing that someone can do to get more excited about art. Meet the artist, hear them speak about the piece, hear them, the passion that they create it. And so that this future potential collector feels like I'm not just buying something that I think is pretty and matches my throw pillows. I'm becoming this artist collector. I'm helping this artist grow. And that's incredibly empowering for both people. And to be able to hear the story behind the piece and really know a little bit more about the background and in the inspiration, it makes the collector feel more comfortable and confident about putting it on their wall and being able to speak about it.
Kat, I wanted to go back to something you mentioned about a lot of your clients wanting to scale back in terms of budgets and try to learn to do things on their own. It seems that the craft of photography has taken a bit of a hit, maybe in terms of public perception, because everyone feels that they can now...
It's democratized.
Yes, it's very democratized.
Democratized, that's a great word.
So I wanted to get your perspective, Kat, and even yours, Jennifer, but talk about the role that technology has played in how people perceive your work now.
Well, I think that photography is a lower buy-in these days, because when it first started, you know, having to have film and like developing and all that stuff, that was extra cost. Now, you know, you buy in at what? You can get a prosumer camera at maybe $500 or even used for like a couple hundred at that, and just start clicking and shooting, playing around with your settings. But to your point, because of that low entry point, people feel that they can, you know, learn and grow within this craft, and don't really understand that just because you have a fancy camera, it doesn't mean that there aren't any challenges outside of like maybe lighting. You know, there's composition, there's even knowing like what the like aperture and shutter speed and some terminology is. I recently, or since last year, Living Social contacted me and asked me to throw classes, photography classes, as a offer. And I really had to think about that because I don't necessarily teach, but I've been doing it every summer since last year. So this is my second term. It's like my 20th class or something like that. And one thing I notice is a lot of the people that purchase the offer and that I'm teaching to are people who want to start to get into the business. And I agree, it's really cool to take classes and learn, but you can't just think. You have to be realistic. Getting a camera and learning the basics aren't just the only two things you need to do. There's dedication involved. There's studying even further. And there's just actually liking what you do. If money is your focus in this whole thing, then it's not going to last very long. Because there are days, I'll tell you, where you don't know when your next paycheck is getting in. But you got to continue with the hustle and the craft and just learning, and just know that if you do all those things, it will come together. So.
Well, and I think, too, from a business standpoint, when you were saying that the companies are cutting back trying to get the shots themselves, and what you said off air before we started was that your tagline, what was your tagline?
Oh, yeah, excitement can't be Photoshopped.
Right. And so it's about, I think today it's about carving a niche for yourself and saying you can have all the equipment that you want, but this is something that I can do that only I can do. And so if you want this, you're going to have to come to me.
Yep.
Even on the creative side, Jennifer, when I look at something like Instagram, where everyone is now this, super artistic and creative photographer capturing the moments of their lives now, how have the advances that we see now impacted even the artistic perception of photography?
Sure. So like a person who might want to buy photography might be less inclined to, because they think, oh, I could do that, kind of?
They could do that, or maybe because they can do it, perhaps they don't value it as much because, oh, I could do that. If they see something on the wall somewhere or even in your gallery space, one might think, oh, I just saw a shot like that on Instagram, or I could do that myself.
Sure.
And maybe that in some way devalues the art from a certain perspective. Can you speak to that? Am I making myself clear on that? Okay.
Yeah. I think that what's important to stress to an audience is that the a fine art photographer, an artist, really has, this is a body of work that they are putting together. This is a project that they, that has a conceptual background to it. So it's not just rainbows and unicorns, I like to say, that this artist was really compelled to make this work about this topic. And this artist has a unique story to tell, and the way that they are telling it is not something that anybody else is doing. I mean, this is what I tell to artists too when I look at work, and it's like, okay, yes, people have photographed, I'm just looking at your shoes. People have photographed tennis shoes before, and I'm looking at your tennis shoe photographs. So tell me why you had to photograph tennis shoes, and why are, what are you telling me about them that I don't already know? What are you making me think or feel that's unique, that only, that you are the best person to make me think and feel this about tennis shoes? The way that you have chosen to capture them is telling me something that I've never thought of before, really making me think and feel. And those are the artists that I want to work with. And those are the artists that I feel strongly about advocating to audiences. This is, these are tennis shoes in a way that you've never thought about them before. Let me tell you this artist's story behind how they got to be photographing these and why it's important.
At this point, I would love to talk about Atlanta and beyond, because both of you all, both of you have spent time outside of Atlanta. Kat, you're co-located between Atlanta and Los Angeles, and Jennifer, you go on a lot of trips, art retreats, as well as your crusade for art. So I would love to get some perspective on Atlanta as maybe an art audience, as a city.
I would love to get some perspective on why Kat is in Atlanta in July instead of L.A.
I just came back from L.A.
Okay. Hopefully for a brief amount of time, because it is hot and buggy here.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's pretty hot over there right now,
yes,
too.
Yes, but it's breezy.
It is breezy. Quite pleasant, actually. But, yeah, I mean, but you all have traveled around a lot, and I think that you may have picked up on some things from different audiences, whether it's the corporate side of things, whether it's the art crowd. I know, Kat, you've also had exhibitions with Art Beats and Lyrics,
yeah,
and that's traveled around the country as well. So I would love just sort of your gut reactions on Atlanta versus elsewhere, or I guess maybe even better, if there are certain things that you noticed elsewhere, speak to that, and we can sort of contrast those with Atlanta.
Well, I was very fortunate to go to Art Basel last year, and that was mind-blowing, to the fact where I think I was overstimulated, because there were a lot of shows there and a lot of artists that had, I can't even describe it. It was just things that I didn't even know could happen in art. Like, there was a person who had needles that created, like, floating needles that created this awesome face in layers. I'm really not describing this well on the podcast, but if you were here, I'm kind of showing them with my
hands. She got a lot of hand gestures.
I have a lot of hand gestures, but things like that. Like, I know during Art Basel, you see the best of the best. And even the people who were in the Wynwood District showed in the Wynwood District, which is another area in Miami of shows that couldn't get into the Art Basel shows, you see the level of the level at which people challenge themselves. People try to, you know, go over the top with some awesome concepts like Jennifer was talking about. You know, their stories were so, you know, compelling. It could be, like your example, a pair of shoes, but how they got to that pair of shoes, where those pair of shoes came from, what happened to those shoes, you know? And in L.A., I just think even at the smallest coffee shop, you see, like, the best work. I just see so much more work outside, like, around, and the city kind of, like, supporting arts a lot more, maybe, in different cities. Not that Atlanta isn't supporting it. It's just not as visible, like, from city, you know, perspective. I don't know if that's...
I feel like Atlanta has a really fantastic arts community. I think Atlanta's a great city to live in if you're an artist. Not totally. I think Atlanta's a great city to live in if you're an artist looking for a community of artists.
Agreed.
And there are a lot of just really, really awesome arts organizations and opportunities to participate in art as an artist. I think Atlanta is a really, really tough city for art buyers in that we have not so many, and we don't have a culture of going to galleries and supporting our local artists and purchasing art. And I think that I was talking to someone who lives in Lexington, Virginia, and has a gallery there showing emerging photographers. And she says, she's like, and she's on the second floor of kind of the main strip. I can't really, I've never been to Lexington, but
I never knew there was a Lexington.
Right. So, historic battlefields. So, second story. And she's like, yeah, I mean, I get usually about 3 to 7 walk-ins a day into her gallery on the second story of a small town in Virginia. Now, wow. I, you know, when I had my gallery in on the west side, gorgeous big gallery space, West Side Art District, I probably got 3 to 7 walk-ins per year of people that I didn't already know. You know, wow. Just people walking in off the street saying, like, oh, is there a gallery there? And now that I have my space in Virginia Highlands, you have to – it's more tucked in, and it isn't impacting my sales in any way. I didn't get any sales from walk-in traffic. It's all about – me going out and building relationships. And so a huge reason that I wanted to move into my space was, one, so that I could have shows there but also in other places and unique locations that fit the work to do have more of an experiential aesthetic experience that I talked about being important before, but also so that I could spend more time having coffees with people and building these relationships of the people I'm cultivating to become collectors. Because that, to me, over the last 4.5 years has been, in Atlanta, the only thing that has driven sales. You know, doing programs where getting these people in and meeting the artists and doing interesting, you know, it's really cultivating someone, really getting them comfortable and moving along. Not because I was in a fancy gallery where people would walk in and buy something.
And I wanted to add on something you said a little earlier about the city programs, right?
Mm-hmm.
One thing I will say is I'm really happy to see, like, programs like Arts on the Beltline happening, mm-hmm. because it's giving artists opportunity to show publicly, you know. And
public arts also.
Yeah, having people know that, hey, there are artists like this here, and maybe, like, they would be in galleries like Jennifer's gallery. And also, when you just said something about cultivating, there's another program called Arts Cool, and I think it's by the City of Cultural Affairs, where they take high school students and actually start introducing art to them over the summer and have resident artists from around the arts community teach those kids. So I think that's really important. And I think that's a good start to hopefully contending with some of the other cities that
right.
are more...
More appreciation.
Yeah.
This podcast is proudly brought to you by Octane Coffee. For more information, please visit octanecoffee.com. Now, Jennifer, I still want to continue to put you on the spot just a little bit because
I love being on the spot.
I'm a big fan of the Crusade for Art, and I think you need to speak a little bit more about that and,
sure.
and what you did with that and going to different cities and some of the programming that you did. Just give some more background on that, please.
Sure. So I had done a lot of things in Atlanta through the gallery, walk away with art, art feast dinners, art circles, a lot of kind of programs that I thought of and tried out and that I felt, again, were working on this level of connecting a person with the artist and the artwork and having giving them an opportunity to make a connection. And so, but I also felt that it was really limiting to sit in one space with four walls in one city and try to draw people, you know, lure people in. And so I had this totally crazy idea to take it to the road, you know, bring art to the people and to really seek out people who were not looking for an arts experience and give them one without them knowing it was like a shock and awe. and so I created this Crusade for Collecting tour project. And so that was one special project within the Crusade for Art umbrella, which is just more about advocacy and education and programming. So so I raised money on Kickstarter to buy this 77 Volkswagen bus. Lady Blue is her name. And traveled to 10 different cities around the country. And in each city, I curated, I selected through applications and things like that, five different photographers in each city who were each at the event with 10 small copies of a single image signed and printed, ready to go. So we would pull up to a high foot traffic part of town and jump out in our Crusade t-shirts. And these five photographers would each be there holding their photos outward facing, and as people would walk by, say, I mean, some cities were a lot easier. It's really hard to give away something for free. Would try to draw people in. We have five local photographers. They're each giving away photographs. You know, you can speak to each of them. You can hear them, ask them questions. You can learn the story, and you can keep the image that speaks to you the most. And we weren't requiring any money or email addresses, although we were encouraging conversations. I mean, the artists weren't supposed to just be throwing them at people as they were walking by. So, you know, the goal was really for each artist to have 10 conversations with someone who liked theirs the most and hopefully traded contact information. And then we were building 50 new collectors in each city, and each artist had 10 people, new contacts of people that lived in their own community that they would hopefully follow up with. It was awesome. It was a really, really exciting and empowering experience. It was frustrating a lot of times, you know, for the artists. Like, we're trying to, can't even give away our work because people weren't expecting it.
Yeah,
you know,
they're
walking
like,
from brunch to coffee on a Saturday and they're like, what are you doing? But the people that stopped, there were some just absolutely phenomenal kind of aha moments to experience. And it was really amazing.
What did you learn?
What did I learn? I learned that Volkswagen buses are not very reliable vehicles. Adorable, yet temperamental. I learned a lot of things. Honestly, I think I learned a lot more in the year and a half of planning and fundraising and getting exposure for the project than I probably did on the road. Because it's, you know, I just wasn't maybe prepared for you have this great idea or what you think is
a great idea
and you put it out there and you expect in your warped head people to be like, oh my God, this is amazing, you know? And there was definitely 90% of, oh my God, this is amazing. And then there was 10% of that was pretty, you know how you hear the negative a lot louder than you hear the positive?
Even though 90%
really,
was positive.
Right. Really critical and a lot of times not very tactfully critical, you know, about me or about the program. And so just really learning to hone in on what exactly it is I believe in and what I'm trying to do and recognize that and try to explain that this is one idea. You know, this is one I'm really trying to inspire people and help people create their own programs that will hopefully be create some systemic changes in the entire arts world. And I mean, that sounds really lofty and kind of ridiculous when I say it out loud, but I do feel that there's so much amazing art out there. There's a lot of not amazing art, but there's a lot of great art out there, and there's such a very narrow avenue of traditional ways to get your work exposed, you know, going through a gallery, going through collecting institution, all of these things that, and especially for emerging artists, it's just, it's too narrow for how much is out there. And so we can be really innovative, and we, if we give some time and thought to what we do with the art after it's complete, then, and if we're getting our creative force really brainstorming and putting all of that creative energy and brain power behind trying to solve this problem of we have so much art and not enough ways to get it out there, not enough people to appreciate it. So if we can get our creative force thinking about how do I get people to appreciate my art, I think we have a really great chance of making some differences and making a community that supports art in a lot bigger and more significant ways. So that's what I don't know if that answered what I learned, but it definitely, that's what I feel strongly about. And also that, yes, I, driving around the country was crazy and, you know, awesome. And it was really amazing for me to see these connections being made. But it was one program. And I don't feel, I think a misperception is that I personally, or the Crusade in general, is about giving away art. And I'm not. I think that for a certain artist at a certain level, a certain type, you know, a certain level in their career, it may be an interesting way for them to connect to new people, but it's not the only way. And it's not maybe even the best way. It's just one idea and something that was inspirational and motivating to other artists. And I feel like that was the biggest success of it, to get people thinking about how can I connect people to my art. Let's let that digest.
Let's definitely let that digest. No, that was awesome. I think that was a very compelling and complete answer. Kat, I wanted to go back to you in the photojournalism space.
Okay.
And you mentioned that lots of people are trying to get into this space, or companies are trying to somehow produce more of this work in-house.
Yeah.
In either regard. So I wanted to get your perspective on, or maybe have you give some thoughts to the new entrance into the field. You mentioned a lot of people who are kind of jumping into this, like, I'm going to buy a camera and do this. What advice, or maybe just words of wisdom, I would probably frame it as, do you have for not only those folks who are jumping in with both feet, but also the corporations and the corporate clients that you have?
Well, let me state, not a lot of them, some of them, because a lot of them do also realize the value of specialization. They really do. So, but I will say that a lot of people that I meet that want to jump into photography are looking for inspiration, right? And they believe that pictures move them. So in Jennifer's, to piggyback off of what Jennifer said, inspiration, like having a connection, people already have that connection. But hopefully, I guess the people who want to jump into it think that if this makes them feel good, looking at a photo or taking a photo, then maybe they can make that their passion as well. Well, I guess some of the advice I can give them is, number one, know that, I guess this is something I wish I knew beforehand, is that have some money saved up. You know what I mean? Just like you said, Jennifer, you know, you have this idea, you want to go for it, but it never really pans out exactly in the method or mode that you think it's going to happen. Just, you know, be dedicated. I'm really big on that. Be dedicated and be open to learning, not only from books, but from other people in that field. So it doesn't matter if it's photography you want to be in, painting, or you want to be a plumber. I mean, I don't know. Like, anything you want to do, learn from other people who are currently doing it. And it's a bonus if you can learn from other people who are successful in the field that you want to delve into. But in regards to photography, I really believe that you don't need the highest end equipment to start out. I think you should start out at an entry point that you're comfortable with and grow within that. Because, I mean, that's just how I did it, because I didn't feel that I should spend money. So, like, for me personally, that I didn't want to spend X amount of dollars on the most expensive thing if I didn't even know how to use it. So I'm big on, like, building blocks, you know? Learn a little bit. Then if you can't do anything else with that equipment, get the next one that'll help you, and so forth. So.
Well, you also talked about being open to learning. And yes. I am open to learning here on this podcast. And I would love to learn from both of you as businesswomen and as administrators of your craft and your creativity. How do you interpret your place as women in your respective industries?
Do you want to start?
You start.
Okay. Well, number one, there are more male photographers than female photographers, at least in my realm. Like, if you're on a red carpet, for instance, you look at the other photographers there, I'd say 80% are men. And on top of that, they're older too. So you see older photographers, the old school film, you know, traditional, and then you only see maybe about 10-15% younger, like below 40, I would say. And I think as a woman, it's sometimes challenging because it's definitely kind of cutthroat in there. Like, in L.A., I'm speaking about mostly, because in L.A., that red carpet line is really, I can't even think of a word that I'm looking for. Like, if you're stepping in somebody's space, they will elbow you. They will knock you over for the shot. And they're
aggressive.
They're aggressive. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. So I think it's a more aggressive field. And I guess as women, we just have to be able to step up and be more charming, I guess, because I think what we give to it is a more delicate approach, because sometimes the people that are being photographed by men get a little turned off with the aggressiveness. So I think we offer a level of comfort, and I don't know. That's what I have so far.
I think that I would say that there are a lot of male gallery owners. There are a lot of female gallery owners in Atlanta and other places. And it's been really interesting for me, and not something that I sort of expected to be an issue. And I don't know.
I don't even think it's, like, too prevalent in my case. So
yeah, I would just say that I don't think that people have a problem buying from me. I don't think that artists have a problem working with me because I'm a woman, not a man. but I will say that I have in sort of different ways felt there's competition in every field. I've had some really false and in extremely poor taste rumors spread about me, and not something that I think that had nothing to do, you know, personal things that that were incredibly wrong and would give someone a really bad impression. And that wasn't something that I expected, and I'm pretty sure. Gender related. I've heard that I was pregnant from, like, someone's at a photo thing, and, you know, and I was like, I at least get to pick my baby daddy? You know, like, do I at least get to add some, you know, my own elements in here? So just weird things like that, that I'm like, what, you know, I'm a professional person. The other that I've heard is that, a lot of women who are successful gallery owners, like some of the best, are really aggressive and cutthroat, which is are not adjectives that you typically associate with women, more with men. And I have been given advice by people to be more that way, and I won't. I mean, that's not how I move throughout in the world, and I'm not interested in doing anything where I can't, if I can't be successful being who I am, then I'm not interested in doing that. And so that's just been sort of the, what I try to routinely come back to, when there's been feedback about, my tour or about this, that, or the other thing. You know, I feel like I need to handle it. I mean, I, at the bottom line, just with integrity and in a way that I can feel really is true to myself. And I recently had someone post on some photo thing on Facebook this untrue thing. And all of these comments, where's Jennifer to defend herself? And, you know, and for me, I said I invited this person to contact me privately so that I could explain kind of the circumstances. If I had done it publicly, it would have hurt the reputation of a nonprofit that I respect and who relies on private and public funding. And I wasn't, that would hurt photographers. I'm not interested in doing anything. You know, this is it's Facebook. So, but a lot of people that I have worked with or, you know, jumped in on that thread and said, you know, really great things about me. And then someone wrote, look at all these men jumping in to defend Jennifer. Why can't she defend herself? And I'm like, that is such a misogynistic thing to say, you know, like it just was bizarre. And so there's certain things like that that kind of come up. And I think social media is a really interesting thing. I mean, up until a few years ago, if someone didn't like me, it's because they had met me, you know, and they probably still didn't say you totally suck to my face. I maybe have just gotten the vibe like, I don't think we connected, you know, and now it's people can sit home in their pajamas and write whatever they want to whoever they want about whoever they want. And there's and they don't really people don't think about kind of there's still people behind this. I mean, ultimately, in that Facebook situation, I called the person on the phone like, gasp, you know, so old school, you know, about what was posted, because I wanted to clear it up and I wanted it to be civilized in a way that felt good to me, not this, you know, back and forth on social media for an audience of people that we don't even know. And so it's just, it's interesting. I think that this isn't even related to what you're saying, but I think that social media and kind of the internet and all of this is really an amazing resource. It can be an amazing resource. I think it can also be a little tough to navigate at times. And, you know, I think that a lot of people don't consider, they use it as a sounding board without thinking about this is public now. You know, I just was in a cranky mood and someone just cut me off in their car and I just blasted some, you know, permanently, publicly, you know,
it's
to
never gonna be erased.
Right. You know, to give, you know, you just really have to think about what you're putting out there in the world and what, and at the end of the day, what kind of person do you want to be? I think integrity important.
Do either of you have questions for each other based on what you've heard and what we've talked about today?
I don't know. I actually don't. I really think, I do. With your Kickstarter, what was your, what did you think your biggest challenges were in getting the funding for Kickstarting? Or did you find it to be pretty
Well, I did it, and I wrote a blog post about this, kind of, if you're going to do it, these would tips on how to. You had said before about, Kat, about asking people for advice and everything.
Yeah.
And I do think that it's so hard to be successful in art that that a lot of people play really close to the vest and they don't want to share their and I feel the complete opposite. I mean, to me, more is more. You know, the more successful artists we have, the better for everyone. And that's why I write my blog. Like, this is a program that I did, and this is step by step, A to Z, how you can do it yourself if you think it would work for you. So Kickstarter is a perfect example. I did it about a year and a half ago, and it was really at this weird point of artists were kind of sick of it. So if you were in the arts community, you were getting a lot of requests for Kickstarters, but the greater public still didn't know about it so much. Yeah. So it was a tough time to raise money because artists were like, oh, I'm so sick of getting asked for money. And then, like, my mom's friends were like, you want me to give you money for a car? You know, like, what? You want me to put my credit card information on what website? You know, so it was a really weird time. Now it's so mainstream that, yes, everyone's doing a Kickstarter, but the audience for our potential, you know, money givers is a lot bigger. So, I feel like everything is funding right now. Like, the most asinine things are, you know,
being funded.
Yeah. But I think it's an awesome resource.
Well,
I mean, it's such a great way for artists to get money that otherwise, you know, their only option would be to try to get an individual patron or a grant.
That's true. I mean, I ask because you're like the third live person I've met that got a Kickstarter. You know how you, not everybody gets funded.
Right.
So you're the third funded person I've met in real life.
How does it feel?
Oh, my goodness. No. Successful.
Yeah, it's good.
Well, Kat, Jennifer, any closing thoughts on photography, on where you all are professionally, personally, anything like that? I would love to sort of give you all a chance to just give some final words as we close up.
Go ahead.
Or not.
It's hot in here.
Or yes.
All right.
Go for it.
I know. I'm hungry, too. But final thoughts. I don't know. Inspiration is key. Dedication. I always say dedication. Yeah. Learning from others, but also sharing with others, too. And being true to who you are, you know, agreeing with what Jennifer said earlier, if you can't be successful being who you are, then, you know, I mean, you should always be successful being who you are. Let me make that more positive.
Yes, that's good.
You
that's
should
good
always
reframing.
Be successful being who you are. Because my mom used to say this, if they don't like you, forget them. So, I mean, that's all I have.
Me?
You.
Me. Yeah, I think that art is really personal. And just like how I said, it's hard won, the success. And so, and a lot of times you get burned along the way. And it hurts more, I think, getting burned in this field than in others. I mean, it's not like people are making vacuums and I'm deciding which vacuums I'm going to sell in my store. They're putting their heart and their soul into something and then putting it out there hoping for the best. And so when there's a rejection or a criticism, it's hard. It's hard to take, and I understand that. But again, I think it's in as much as we can collaborate and inspire each other and help each other and educate each other, art wins. I mean, and that's really the bottom line, is if you're good and you're all the things Kat said, you're dedicated and you're really, you know, you really want this, then it'll happen. And so I think just keeping that sort of close in, you know, being confident that it will happen for you and that working with other people and sharing and bolstering people in a really positive way is for the best. I think ultimately that makes art win. And I think that's what everyone should I wouldn't say should. I would hope that people kind of aspire to that in general.
Art wins.
Yay. Go art. Art's awesome. Love art. Art's beautiful. Art will change your life.
All of the above. All of the above for sure. Both of you all, let everyone know how they can get in contact with you. .coms, social media information, all of the above.
Go, Kat, go.
All right. Oh, yeah, mine is a little harder to spell, but you can reach me on my website at www.katgaduco.com. That's KatGoDuco.com. And all my social media is at KatGaduco. That could be Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Very standardized.
That's good. That's so good. So good. So for me, if you're interested in looking at the gallery, jenniferschwartzgallery.com. If you're interested in knowing more about Crusade for Art, crusadeforart.com with four spelled out, F-O-R, art. My Twitter is crusade for art with the number four. See, you're clever. Yeah. Making it so easy. No. Facebook, all of that stuff. Twitter. Twitter's king. Crusade for Art. An email, website. You can find me.
Yeah.
Call Floyd.
Call Wonder Root. Ladies, I definitely enjoyed this conversation. Kat and Jennifer, thank you for your time. It was a blast.
Thank you.
Yay.
This podcast is proudly brought to you by Octane Coffee. With locations on the West Side, Grant Park, the Pocket Bar in the Bank of America Plaza, and even the newest outpost in Birmingham, Alabama. For more information, please visit octanecoffee.com.